It's beginning to look a lot. No.
It's beginning to look like what, Paul? Like,
I don't know. I mean,
Valentine's Day? LA, is that our next
LA
holiday?
Always looks the same. I can't tell, like, literally, that's the true. Only difference in LA is the temperature. In that, like, it's
by, like
60
degrees.
Degrees in the winter, and then it's 70. And then, yeah, that's
stark
it.
Difference.
And then sometimes it gets really hot in the summer. But
it was a little rainy this week.
It was rainy this week. I loved that. Yeah. Well, I loved it. San Diego did not enjoy the
rain. Oh, my God. Yeah,
much.
The flooding was insane.
I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah, I saw it on TikTok where I get all my news.
Yeah.
Well, hope our San Diego listeners are okay. And it hasn't turned into, oh, man, I wanted
I
to make
a
really a
house.
Cool Lord of the Rings reference, but I can't think of the name.
The flooding of Isengard?
No, I was going to say, I hope it doesn't turn.
Numenor?
Yeah, that one.
All right. Yeah. The downfall of Numenor.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you guys haven't sunk into the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness.
I see you have a Baja Blast.
I do have a Baja Blast. I've been drinking way too many of these. Like,
when
it's
do
been
you
like
not? Or are you just on a binger?
Well, on average, you can only get Baja Blast from Taco Bell.
Yeah.
And I don't go to Taco Bell that often.
But you, like, have a pack of the Mountain Dew
now
ones.
Now that I can get packs of these. Let's just say I've been brushing my teeth extra hard recently.
Oh,
like
good
I've
job.
Just been like
I made a dentist appointment. I was very proud of that.
Hey. Well, you have such a winning smile. You need to keep it in shape. I would say that's like one of your more defining features.
Thank
I would say
you.
Is you have like a very bright smile.
I am a smiley girl. I've been getting the sweetest compliments just like out of context from people of like, you look so happy. You always seem so happy. And someone commented on my Instagram post, who I don't talk to a whole lot, like a couple times. And they're like, you always look so happy and spreading like positivity. And I'm like, oh, it makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
It's just all your friends love you. And that's just a fact. Oh, goodness. Well, you're in between journeys at the moment.
Yes, indeed.
You're always going to like Hawaii. Like, that's always like.
I just last year I was in Hawaii a lot. And by a lot, like twice. Okay.
Regardless, I think going to Hawaii once is a lot. Like, I've never left the continent.
You're on the West Coast now, so Hawaii is a like closer destination than, like, for us, Angelinos is a closer destination than others. Which I think is why we go to Hawaii a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm also Hawaiian, so there's that.
There's that, yeah. What business do I, white man, have in Hawaii?
I am between trips, though, and it's been great because I'm doing a bunch of cool projects and so much dancing, which is
I've
why
been
I'm
seeing
so
it.
Sleepy. I went to bed at 3 a.m., Paul. 3 a.m. on a Wednesday night with work the next morning. Who am I?
Well, you're someone, like, I literally think of that Instagram post where, like, you had literally just gotten back to L.A. And you got one message from a friend going, where are you for brunch? And then you showed up. And I'm like, oh my goodness. The energy you have, the social battery you possess is ridiculous.
It does.
Like, if I had just gotten off, well, I guess it depends on the friends. Like,
yes.
But, like, on average, like,
charging periods between them.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I do come back and I just sleep. People never see me. But
yeah, no, that's...
I do need the friend recharge after the work.
True.
Runs.
It is a very different
yeah.
type of socializing mm-hmm. where one is you're very professional, you're very on top of things. At brunch, you can just hang out and have a mimosa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mimosas. I haven't had a mimosa in a while.
I don't think I have either. We should brunch
maybe
soon.
When we do, yeah, we should brunch, but we could also do because we have to watch Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, yeah.
Soon. We should do like with our friends who are gonna watch with us, we should do like a little brunch thing where we like make a breakfast and have mimosas.
Oh, cute. Brunch for dinner.
Just ideas. Well,
are we gonna watch? Are we gonna watch it in the morning? Watching Lord of the Rings always feels like a cozy evening activity to me.
You know, that's fair.
which I'm still fine but for I do brunch like, food.
I do like, I like breakfast for dinner. Like, that was, like, my family's go-to, like, if my mom was like, I don't want to cook anything complicated. Mm-hmm. It was, you know what it was? It was, it's dad's night to cook, so he's just gonna do, because he was really good at breakfast foods. I can say this because I know he doesn't listen to the podcast, but
shout out
always,
to Paul's Bill.
He was always
dad.
A bit, to be polite to my father, he was always a bit too adventurous when it came to cooking like dinner foods. Like he'd be like, I'm just trying something out, and I'm just like, I don't want you to try something out. I just want food that I can eat. So
you're like, please,
I,
Dad,
I did favor
tried and true.
Yeah. So he'd always make like a skillet and that would be amazing.
Oh, skillets
or pancakes.
Are good.
Oh, I love a good he was really good at skillets.
Gosh, making me hungry.
You know, I first got
oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's the first time, like, I hated eggs for the longest time. I could not eat eggs because I didn't like the texture.
Mm.
Like, the taste was whatever. Mm-hmm. They barely have a taste. But, like, the texture I didn't like. But then when my dad would, like, mix it in with, like, the hash browns and everything else and the cheese, oh,
Chef's
I could do it.
Kiss.
What were you going to say?
Just speaking of food, I just remembered I have a leftover hibachi leftovers in my fridge right now.
Oh.
I know. I love
that
a hibachi.
Sounds delicious.
Mm.
I haven't been to hibachi since high school. Our
good
friends
stuff.
Owned a hibachi restaurant, and we would go there for like a discount price.
Oh, that's rad.
Good.
Friends owned one? Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, because my parents are teachers, they would always be like on really friendly terms with like the parents and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because they taught at a private school, usually the parents were fairly
You've
wealthy
mentioned
and well
some
off.
Of those rich parent friends.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like half the enjoyment I think I got out of my childhood was simply by the fact that my parents were friends with wealthy people.
You know what?
And
cash
we were able to
it.
Actually do fun stuff.
Cash in
yeah.
on it.
Because other than that, like, our trips were, like, to grandma's house or to just
Classic.
The state over. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Food. Food. Food is delicious. I say having just eaten a warmed-up pizza.
I had some nachos just before we jumped on.
Is just, like, the cheese and the chips, or
yep.
did you add,
just,
like,
what do they
beef?
Call it? Like, oh. the poor man's nachos?
Well, it's the basic nacho.
Tortilla,
it's the...
Yeah, tortilla chips and some microwave cheese. Classic snack.
Go. Classic. Gotta love it. It's like, did you ever just like make toast and then put cinnamon sugar
on
it?
Oh yeah, I've been seeing that going around on TikTok too.
Yeah. Oh, that was a classic.
Yeah.
I always loved that one. I saw a recently, I want to try this out sometime, which was like, a cinnamon sugar, like, oh, I forget what it was, but it's like a sticky, like, toffee toast almost that you can make.
Ooh.
I want to try it sometime because it looked really simple.
It
and
sounds
I saved
like
the
Australian
TikTok
or
it.
New Zealand. Do they have, like, their fairy
it's
toast?
It's not those. It's not those. Fairy toast is just sprinkles on butter on bread. This was, like, actually, like, you fry it in a pan and it gets crispy.
Gosh. Now that we're properly hungry again.
It's a never-ending cycle.
That's just life.
I don't know if I have anything really to talk about as of late. Life's just been going by. That's it.
That's all, folks.
Life's been going by. I got like a sketchy job offer that I accepted and then
was
quickly turned down
with the mafia.
I don't know. It was for a personal assistant role, and I didn't even get interviewed for it. And then they said I was hired.
What?
And that they'd send me a check, and that they need me to deposit the check, and then send the money to someone else.
Whoa, that is so sketchy.
That was It was very sketchy. And I'm like,
how would you get paid for that? Would you get a portion of whatever?
They said to take $700 from that amount.
Whoa.
And keep it for myself.
And that's all you had to do?
And that's all I had to do.
Wow. Where are you finding these jobs?
It was on Indeed.
need a better filter.
It wasn't even the same job that it was offering on Indeed. The job offer on Indeed was like working in an office and answering phones. But it was through that job, like, they contacted me and were like, hey, we're offering you this job. And at first I was like, okay, I don't know. I'm desperate for money. That's what I am.
But not desperate for criminal activity.
Not desperate for really sketchy bullshit.
We still have standards. I'll
just work at a gas station or something. Yeah,
we still have standards.
It was actually when I was at brunch the other day with my roommate. And we're just sitting down eating brunch. And I'm getting these texts. I'm like, you know what? No. And I just say, thanks, but I'm going to turn this offer down. And I just blocked the number.
Smart. And I'm smart. Like, yeah. Probably for your best. Before you have the mafia coming after you.
Well, what for what? For not, like, I don't even have their money.
I don't know, but they have your number now. Just kidding, you're fine.
I guess. I mean, if I die, what do they get? I got no possessions.
Anyway. Well, yesterday I saw a fortune from a fortune cookie. That wasn't my fortune. But it said those around you will get new business opportunities. So may that be
hopefully
the fortune for all.
I might just send a voice reel to like some agencies and just see if they have anything.
Might as well.
I might become a famous actor.
Might as well. So you're already Paul Hollywood.
Who knows? Paul Inglewood.
Update.
Not we're Paul working, Hollywood
we're
yet.
We're working towards the Hollywood part.
I'm a little bit higher. I'm Paul Inglewood. Maybe I'll eventually be Paul Glendale. Who knows?
Well, if you start Paul doing voice Burbank. Acting, probably. Burbank is where all the animation's at.
Burbank. Oh,
should we talk about some Palantirs?
I suppose we should talk about some Palantirs. Is there a Palantir in this chapter called the Palantir?
I don't know. Maybe. That might be some we'll good deductive out. Reasoning.
Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Silly Marillion. As always, I am your host, Paul, gazing into my Discord Palantir to communicate with the Dark Lord, Tori. Tori, how are you doing? Or am I the Dark Lord, and are you the Hobbit who just picked it up?
I think it depends on the day.
Yeah, well, you're wearing dark. You're wearing dark colors. So I'm wearing very nice blue. Today I'll be the Dark Lord. Hawaiian shirts.
I accept.
Look, I'm just saying, you'd make a sexy Dark Lord.
Like, you know, I've been wanting to start my villain era. Maybe it's now.
Like, villains,
I
always
say with
sexy.
A smile.
I think, no, but like a smiling villain, that's a villain in control, and that's sexy. I'm just saying,
anyway,
a lot
Paul,
of lesbians love a good villain.
Thanks for having this Dark Lord on to this podcast, and it is an honor and a privilege as always.
Of course.
Lady. I love the idea of Discord being our Palantir.
Yeah, no, that's it's the perfect perfect thing for it. Just communicating.
So are all Palantirs like walkie-talkies or just this one? Or should I hold this question until we get to some Palantir lore?
Let's save it for a second.
Okay.
Before we dive in and then I can unleash my
unleash
lore.
The lore.
Unleash the lore. Release the lore. So, last time...
on Glee.
We got some bitchy Saruman. Love it. Always love myself some
the
catty
audacity.
Saruman.
Audacity.
That old queen stuck in his tower. It was basically a confrontation of us realizing that Saruman wasn't even that big of a villain. Like, they took care of him real fucking easily.
Just in one chapter, really. Same kind of with Wormtongue. It's like... introduced evil spooky things
because even solved. If the Battle of Helm's Deep was lost, sure, a lot of characters would have died, but like there weren't actually that many people at Helm's Deep defending it. Granted, ooh, that's a good alternate universe. What if Helm's Deep did fall Théoden and Éomer would have died. Éowyn would have been queen of Rohan.
Ooh.
Then. Queen Éowyn.
You think it exists
that
somewhere?
That would have been good. Oh, I don't know, but I love the idea of this vengeful Queen Éowyn leading the Rohirrim afterwards. Because Isengard would have been destroyed.
I just love a vengeful queen anyway. That's some cockle shit right there.
that's all I can say.
You
actually
just ended Éowyn there. I love Éowyn.
But yeah, and it was this confrontation that Gandalf was basically putting Saruman in his place, letting him know that he's basically not a wizard anymore. He's been cast out of the Order. And basically ensuring that he'll stay under house arrest under the watchful eye of the Ents.
He really is on
and
house arrest.
And then Grima hucked Saruman's phone down at them.
God, and talk now they about have a rookie his phone. Mistake.
I guess he was just trying to find, like, the heaviest looking object around
him. I mean, it does kind of look like a cannonball.
Yeah, it just looks like a bowling ball.
But
like,
I imagine
pretty,
he probably had it on,
dense.
Like, a pretty stand or something. And, like, why would you chuck that?
Look.
He's not the brightest.
What goes through, Wormtongue's mind. Who could say? So we basically pick up with them leaving Isengard after they've all said goodbye to Treebeard and the Ents. And they're making for Helm's Deep. And afterwards, they are going to marshal the forces of Rohan and head to Gondor's aid.
Mm-hmm.
There's not too much to talk about with this chapter, at least at the beginning.
They do some riding. Merry is very inquisitive.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to ask a lot of questions, and Gandalf is basically doing his wizard bullshit of not answering or answering in riddles.
It's Merry being very inquisitive and Gandalf being like, I don't have time for you being inquisitive. I ain't got time for you having questions.
I need to think. And I can't think with you talking.
All right, I'll tackle Strider by the campfire. He's less testy.
I loved that little shade that he threw in.
And Gandalf says that he is worried about how Isengard and Barad-dûr were able to share such information with each other over such long distances without anyone knowing. And he kind of wants to look into that a bit more.
A little hint to their walkie-talkie system. I wonder how they do it.
So they set up a camp on a hill called Dol Baran. I think they call it a bivouac, this camp.
They call it the what?
A bivouac.
Bivouac?
Yeah, it's like a...
How do you even spell that?
A bivouac is a temporary camp without tents or cover.
Oh.
Used especially by soldiers or mountaineers.
So basically just sleeping on the ground in the dirt. Stars yeah. above you.
Yeah, and that's what the riders do.
Hmm.
But they all lie down, and so Merry and Pippin are sleeping next to each other, and Pippin is just very anxious, and Merry asks him what's wrong. They do talk about how Gandalf seems very changed now that he's come back, because they really haven't had much time with Gandalf.
And that really is kind of a shock to have seen your mentor die, and then he comes back.
But he just doesn't have any time for you.
Yeah. And a different color, kind of a different personality. That sounds like too much, but maybe cadence? Even the way they describe him is like, it doesn't really give an answer of what he's like. He can be both
Merry
kinder
says,
and more alarming, merrier and more solemn than before. He has changed, but we have not had a chance to see how much yet. And then you get a little bit of wizard lore of how Saruman used to be the superior and the head, and he was Saruman the White. But since Gandalf has come back, Gandalf is the White now. And, basically demoted Saruman.
And then it turns to Pippin, who is very obsessed, kind of, with this glass ball he picked up. The Palantir that we know it is. And he kind of fixates on it.
It's really reminded me of, like, Frodo with the ring. Or Bilbo with
anyone with
the ring, really. That, like,
anyone
obsession.
With the ring. Anyone with the ring. But also, like, I think this is... Because... The Palantirs don't really have that effect. They don't compel people to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a bit of it is just Pippin being naturally curious.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe being annoyed at Gandalf for having been so closed off now that he's back.
Yeah.
And
he has a good point, which I think he says it in here, of he would like some answers and not just being thrown into danger and not knowing, like, for what or why so, which is so very valid.
Merry goes, "So that's what's bothering you. Now, Pippin, my lad, don't forget Gildor's saying, the one Sam used to quote, 'Do not meddle in the affairs of wizards, for they are subtle and quick to anger.' But our whole life for months has been one long meddling in the affair of wizards," said Pippin. "I should like a bit of information as well as danger. I should like a look at that ball."
My note on that one thing is true.
Pippin is kind of rightfully annoyed that they just don't have any answers right now. They've been thrown from place to place. And, like, granted, they did get some answers from Treebeard, but he's also an Ent, so they only got it from him after a long period of time.
Probably because he talks so slow.
But Merry is very much like, "You're just grumpy, just go to sleep, don't worry about it." And Pippin's like, "You go to sleep." And Merry's like, "Okay, I will." And he does.
And a few minutes later, he does. Good for him.
But he's very sincere about it. "I'm sorry, Pippin, but you really must wait till the morning. I'll be as curious as you like after breakfast, and I'll help in any way I can at wizard wheedling. But I can't keep awake any longer. If I yawn any more, I shall split at the ears. Good night." But that doesn't satiate Pippin one bit.
He tries to sleep. And then he's rolling over and still thinking about it. So might as well, you know, check in on that curiosity. Oh my gosh, this chapter is literally curiosity killed the cat.
It is. It really is. So Pippin sneaks up to where Gandalf is lying down, and he manages to get the orb, the pondering orb, into his hands. And he does kind of chastise himself. He says, "You idiotic fool, you're going to get yourself into frightful trouble. Put it back quick. But also, I'll never get it back now without waking him. Not till I'm a bit calmer, so I may as well have a look first. Nothing just here, though. Not just here, though." And so he sneaks away from the camp to look at it. And then we get this kind of interesting description of it. Pippin sat with his knees drawn up and the ball between them. He bent low over it, looking like a greedy child stooping over a bowl of food in a corner away from others. He drew his cloak aside and gazed at it. The air seemed still and tense about him. At first the globe was dark, black as jet, with the moonlight gleaming on its surface. Then there came a faint glow, and a stir in the heart of it, and it held his eyes so that now he could not look away. Soon all the inside seemed on fire, the ball was spinning, or the lights within were revolving. Suddenly the lights went out. He gave a gasp and struggle, but he remained bent, clasping the ball with both hands. Closer and closer he bent, and then became rigid. His lips moved soundlessly for a while. Then there was a strangled cry. He fell back and lay still. The cry was piercing. The guards leapt from the banks, and all the camp was soon astir.
"So this is the thief," said Gandalf. Hastily he cast his cloak over the globe where it lay. "But you, Pippin, this is a grievous turn to things."
He knelt by Pippin's body. The hobbit was lying on his back, rigid, with unseeing eyes staring up at the sky.
"The devilry! What mischief has he done to himself and to all of us?"
The wizard's face was drawn and haggard. He took Pippin's hand and bent over his face, listening for his breath. Then he laid his hands on his brow. The hobbit shuddered, his eyes closed. He cried out and sat up, staring in bewilderment at all the faces round him, pale in the moonlight.
"It is not for you, Saruman,"
he cried in a shrill and toneless voice, shrinking away from Gandalf.
"I will send for it at once. Do you understand? Say just that."
Then he struggled to get up and escape, but Gandalf held him gently and firmly.
"Peregrine Took," he said, "come back."
The hobbit relaxed and fell back, clinging to the wizard's hand.
"Gandalf,"
he cried.
"Gandalf, forgive me."
"Forgive you?" said the wizard. "Tell me first what you have done."
I took the ball and looked at it.
stammered Pippin.
And I saw things that frightened me, and I wanted to go away, but I couldn't. And then he came and questioned me, and he looked at me, and that is all I remember.
That won't do, said Gandalf sternly. What did you see? What did you say?
Pippin shut his eyes and shivered, but said nothing. They all stared at him in silence, except Merry, who turned away. But Gandalf's face was still hard.
Speak!
He said. In a low, hesitating voice, Pippin began again, and slowly his words grew clearer and stronger.
I saw a dark sky and tall battlements,
he said,
and tiny stars. It seemed very far away and long ago, yet hard and clear. Then the stars went in and out. They were cut off by things with wings. Very big, I think, really. But in the glass they looked like bats wheeling around the tower. I thought there were 9 of them. One began to fly straight towards me, getting bigger and bigger. It had a horrible... No, I can't say. I tried to get away, because I thought it would fly out, but when it had covered all the globe, it disappeared. Then he came. He did not speak so that I could hear words. He just looked, and I understood. So you have come back? Why have you neglected to report for so long? I did not answer. He said, Who are you? And still did not answer, but it hurt me horribly, and he pressed me, so I said, Hobbit. Then suddenly he seemed to see me, and he laughed at me. It was cruel. It was like being stabbed with knives. I struggled, but he said, Wait a moment. We shall meet again soon. Tell Saruman that this dainty is not for him. I will send for it at once. Do you understand? Say just that. Then he gloated over me. I felt I was falling to pieces. No, I can't say any more. I don't remember anything else.
Look at me, said Gandalf.
Pippin looked up straight into his eyes. The wizard held his gaze for a moment in silence. Then his face grew gentler, and the shadow of a smile appeared. He laid his hand softly on Pippin's head.
All right, he said. Say no more. You've taken no harm. There's no lie in your eyes, as I feared. But he did not speak long with you. The fool, but an honest fool you remain, Peregrine took. Wiser ones might have done worse in such a pass. But mark this, you have been saved, and all your friends too, mainly by good fortune, as it is called. You cannot count on it a second time. If he had questioned you, then and there, almost certainly you would have told all that you know, to the ruin of us all. But he was too eager. He did not want information only, he wanted you, quickly, so that he could deal with you in the Dark Tower slowly. Don't shudder. If you will meddle in the affairs of wizards, you must be prepared to think of such things. But come, I forgive you. Be comforted. Things have not turned out as evilly as they might.
He lifted Pippin gently and carried him back to his bed. Merry followed and sat down beside him.
Lie there and rest if you can, Pippin, said Gandalf. Trust me, if you feel an itch in your palms again, tell me of it. Such things can be cured. But anyway, my dear hobbit, don't put a lump of rock under my elbow again. Now I will leave you two together for a while.
Spooky. It's like he looked into his soul.
Yeah. So
poor Pippin. That's some trauma right there.
That is some trauma. He actually saw the Dark Lord. He saw Sauron. Not even Frodo sees Sauron.
Whoa. Who has seen Sauron?
Pippin, Galadriel, I'm only mentioning characters we know in the books.
Yeah.
Gandalf, Elrond, Saruman, obviously.
Yeah.
And Gollum.
Wow.
They are
what
the
company?
Only ones who've seen Saruman. Not Saruman, Sauron.
They could have like a support group for what they've gone through.
What a weird group of people.
Right?
Have a Sauron support group. Yeah. No, it's... I think it's really... I think it was a shame that the movies only ever depicted Sauron as a big floating eyeball above the tower, when in reality, he's the shadowy, almost Dementor-like wraith creature wandering the halls of the Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Sending out his influence into the world. And, like, to the point that, like, Gollum can say, oh, he's still missing his ring finger. I've seen how many fingers he has. He only has 9.
Mm-hmm.
And also, funny that him only having nine fingers, but he also has the nine Nazgul. The number nine is very interesting in that aspect.
Importance there.
Yeah. But to the fact then that Pippin can actually see this Dark Lord and describes him only as him, and how Sauron is just so powerful, he can influence his mind through the Palantir to basically give him the information he desires.
That's wild.
Yeah. The fact that it hurt Pippin not to answer him was it's kind of fucked up.
When he's just basically looking through like a video call.
Yeah, honestly. So, and that's the interesting thing with Palantirs. You have to be very, I want to say wise, strong-willed to use a Palantir. So here's, I'm going to lore dump on you because you did have some questions about the Palantir.
Give it to me.
So, Palantirs were made by Feanor.
So that's when I read that part in here, I was like, this guy.
This motherfucker, he's still around. That son of a bitch.
Feanor. I don't think he's been mentioned by name.
I think this is the only time he's mentioned by name in the books, yeah.
Freaking Feanor. When I tell you, all the listeners know, when I tell you I screamed.
When I get you, Feanor, when I get you, they're made by Feanor, and they're basically, they can communicate with each other. So it's basically like a magic phone system. There are only seven of them, but they can all communicate with each other.
Wait, I thought there's nine.
No. There's nine Nazgul. There are seven Palantir. Because
I see.
There
were seven stars and seven stones.
Yep. And there was the Master Stone, which was this massive one that had to be like lifted by multiple people. It was huge. And they kept that in Osgiliath, which was the capital of Gondor at the time. Okay. And then there was the Anor Stone, which is in Minas Tirith. There's the Ithil Stone that Sauron now has, because it was in Minas Ithil, and Sauron took that one.
Mm.
There's the Isengard Stone, which, surprise, in Isengard. And then you have, in the north, there were three stones, the Annúmenas Stone, and the Amon-Sul Stone. So the stone that, Weathertop, where Frodo gets stabbed, that used to hold a Palantir. And Annúmenas was the capital of Arnor for a time, and that held a Palantir. Both those were lost during the fall of Arnor. And then you have the Elendil Stone, which the elves have. But the Elendil Stone is different because it can't communicate with the other stones. It's always centered looking on the west. And elves will make pilgrimages from like Rivendell to this tower where the Palantir is. Like, that Palantir is actually like super close to the Shire. It is like incredibly close to the Shire. And like,
okay, I know a little bit about that one because it comes into play in the Lord of the Rings D&D game I'm playing. In a very fun way, and I'm so excited for y'all to hear.
Yes.
So,
well, now you know.
I know now, a little more Palantir.
Oh my goodness! Now I'm really excited to listen into this game.
It was a really good episode. It was one of my favorites. You're going to love it so much. Okay, anyway, I digress.
You got some nerve telling me about it before it's come out.
My DM listens to the podcast. Hey, James.
Hi, James. I don't know you. Hi, James.
James knows you.
Hello, James. So, yeah, the Palantirs can all communicate with each other. But if you have a strong will, you can use it to basically look anywhere you want. And of old, like, the kings would use it to, like, oversee their realm and keep an eye on things to make sure there weren't, like, enemies attacking or, like, natural disasters happening. It was like a surveillance network, basically.
So they could be cell phones and security cameras.
Yes. But again, they can only be cell phones between other people who also have Palantirs.
So walkie-talkie is the better.
Walkie-talkie is definitely probably... Well, you need a cell phone to get another cell phone call, don't you?
That's true.
But anyway, Then things can happen to these Palantirs where they do get, like, tidally, I guess you could say tidally locked on a specific location. Like, the Elendil stone, the one,
oh, that points west.
The one that points west, it only looks west, and it's specifically for the elves to look and gaze into the west with. I believe Elendil a few times tried to find Numenor with it, thinking he could find, like, maybe some remains of Numenor, but he could never find it.
Wow. How did Feanor make these? Just
how did he make the Silmarils?
You know, that's
the
valid.
Whole thing about Feanor is he makes these incredible things and then tells no one how he did it. He's like, I'm taking this to my grave. And then he immediately fucking dies the minute he gets to Middle Earth.
Then you know what he does? He dies.
He just pieces out and his body bursts into flames because he's just so fucking passionate.
And makes everyone else deal with his drama.
Yeah, you gotta respect him a little bit for it.
No, I will not.
No, you will respect Feanor. Respect Feanor challenge. Go. Failed. So yeah, that's the deal with the Palantirs. And if a specific will has like a hold of the Palantir, like Sauron, he can basically pull the gaze of anyone else who has a Palantir who doesn't have a strong will. And given that there are so few Palantirs left, it makes it very easy for him. So
that's
one
kind of how he got Pippin.
Yeah, Pippin just by touching it made Sauron aware of him, and Sauron like took his Palantir and enforced his will. That's why Pippin couldn't release the Palantir either. And people talk about how part of what made Saruman so corrupted was he started using the Palantir to search for the One Ring, and it caught the attention of Sauron, and then Sauron was able to like corrupt him in subtle ways. Say when we get to Denethor, that's another impact, but Denethor is different because Denethor isn't corrupted. He's discouraged by the Palantir.
Interested to learn about him.
Yeah. Because I have to do Denethor justice, because Aaron, friend of the pod, hey Aaron, is a major Denethor stan, and they have given me
Denethor's
excellent...
number one stan, if you will.
Yes. If Denethor has one fan, it's them. that whole thing. So we'll get more into Denethor later. But yeah, that's the basic deal with the Palantirs.
Love me some lore.
After all that, Gandalf takes away the Orthanc stone and holds a little council with Aragorn and the others as well. And then Gandalf essentially says, you know, the Palantirs belonged to the royal line of Elendil. This technically belongs to you, so I will give it to you.
That was a pretty cool moment.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't he, like, where does he, like, unwrap it and, like, bow or something to give it to him?
Gandalf looked at Aragorn, and then, to the surprise of the others, he lifted the stone and bowed as he presented it. Receive it, Lord, he said, in earnest of other things that shall be given back. But if I may counsel you in the use of your own, do not use it yet. Be wary.
It and felt Aragorn very passing goes, of the torch.
Yeah, and Aragorn goes, when have I been hasty or unwary, who have waited and prepared for so many long years? Never yet. Do not then stumble at the end of the road, answered Gandalf.
Man, after what just happened to Pippin, I don't know if I'd want to be carrying that thing.
Yeah, no, I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, I don't want this. Keep it off.
Keep it off. Disconnect. Put it on airplane mode.
Yeah, put the Palantir. Oh god, if you could just put the Palantir on airplane mode. That would be helpful.
Block Sauron's number, please.
But yeah, they then decipher that this was how Mordor and Isengard were able to be in contact so easily.
Then they decide kind of on a course of action here.
Yeah, they have to think quickly because now Sauron has information.
Yeah. Luckily, not too much, because Pippin is a fool, but enough.
Well, yeah, he has false information, and Gandalf recognizes the use of feeding him false info, but even that they need to act quickly. Yeah, that they need to act quickly to at least take advantage of this this moment they've been given.
And essentially, Sauron thinks that Pippin is at the tower.
Yes, that's another one.
The hobbit that they're looking for, right?
Yeah, so essentially they deduce that Sauron immediately believed Pippin to be Frodo, because he doesn't know which halfling does have
I love
the ring.
How they're all just like, oh, a hobbit. It must be the hobbit. Like, there's not more hobbits that exist.
Well, to them, basically, that's the thing. Like, hobbits have, like, been completely out of the way. They haven't been connected with anything.
They don't leave the Shire. They don't leave
They don't
their
leave
holes.
The Shire. They don't get involved with, affairs of this kind. Like, I'm pretty sure, Sauron only learned about hobbits because of Gollum. He's like, hobbits, like, Shire Baggins, and, like, Sauron's like, what the fuck are those? Like, what the hell is that? And it's kind of
what
ironic
is this
that
little guy?
Because Sauron prides himself on being a master of knowledge, that he knows so much about the world. Anything he doesn't know is unimportant. And yet, it's the unimportant things, it's the hobbits, who end up being his undoing.
Love that. Love
it's that. Just a fun little...
Downfall is his ignorance.
Yeah.
And some little guys.
There are no such things as insignificant people in the world.
That's beautiful, Paul. I love that.
One of my favorite lines is from Doctor Who, because he sees a frozen girl, and he goes, "Who is she?" And the guy who's frozen her goes, "No one important." And the doctor goes, "Wow, that's fascinating. I've never met someone who wasn't important."
That's so sweet. Oh, good line, good line.
So, yeah, Gandalf says, "We must snatch that time. We have been leisurely. We must move. The neighborhood of Isengard is no place now to linger in. I will ride at once with Peregrin Took. It will be better for him than lying in the dark while others sleep." I believe the initial plan is to ride to Helm's Deep, essentially. However, they are interrupted by a fucking Nazgul.
Another little surprise bitch moment.
Yeah, surprise, motherfucker. At that moment, a shadow fell over them. The bright moonlight seemed to be suddenly cut off. Several of the riders cried out and crouched, holding their arms above their heads, as if to ward off a blow from above. A blind fear and deadly cold fell on them. Cowering, they looked up. A vast winged shape passed over the moon like a black cloud. It wheeled and went north, flying at great speed, flying at a speed greater than any wind of Middle-earth. The stars fainted before it. It was gone.
Spooky!
So, that is basically a Nazgul that was immediately dispatched by the Dark Lord as soon as he got in contact with Pippin.
Release the Nazgul.
Yeah, and...
So quick! Has it, how long has it been?
Not that long.
Like,
I think, no, wait, I think hours? The Nazgul was already en route to Isengard. It just so happened to pass overhead at that moment.
Damn, they work fast.
Man, this is efficient. This is an efficient Nazgul.
Yeah, they should use them for the postal service.
Cool. And at that, Gandalf is like, okay, we gotta go.
Gotta go. Gotta go fast. Shadowfax. And then basically he scoops up Pippin while he's still sleeping.
Yeah, going to Pippin, Gandalf picked him up in his arms. "You shall come with me this time," he said. "Shadowfax shall show you his paces." And he ran to the place where he had slept. Yeah, he gets on Shadowfax and says, "Farewell, follow fast. Away, Shadowfax." And they, again, Gandalf being Gandalf, just being like, okay, see ya, bye.
Gotta go, gotta blast. He's here and he's there.
And then Mary is just very upset. Some folks have wonderful luck.
Yeah.
He did not want to sleep, and he wanted to ride with Gandalf, and there he goes, instead of being turned into a stone himself to stand here forever as a warning. If you had been the first to lift the Orthanc stone and not he, how would it be now? Said Aragorn. You might have done worse, who can say? But now it is your luck to come with me, I fear, at once. Go and get ready, and bring anything that Pippin left behind. Make haste.
Kind of feel bad for Mary, too, to have, like, just woken up to hear that your best friend was, like, kind of possessed by the Dark Lord.
Yeah.
And now is just getting
after you told him,
whisked away.
After he did what you told him not to do.
Mm-hmm. And then fell asleep and woke up and, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Too.
But yeah, Pippin rides with Gandalf. And Gandalf starts to give some answers.
Just some. As a treat.
At first, like, Pippin's like, how long is this going to take? And, yeah, like, he's like, well, Shadowfax is very fast, so we'll make some time. And then he hears, after some, like, time in silence, he hears the wizard singing a song. I don't know the notes to this song, but it goes, tall ships and tall kings, three times three. What brought they from the foundered land over the flowing sea? Seven stars and seven stones and one white tree. And Gandalf talks about the Palantiri, what I basically told you about them. The name that means that which looks far away.
Like a telescope.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah, this is one of those items that just does everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly versatile. You can throw it at your enemies if you need to. See? Wormtongue wasn't stupid. He's like, oh my god, this is a multi-purpose tool.
Multi-purpose tool, that's what I was thinking of.
I could use this to smash someone's head in.
That's going to be the name of this chapter. Palantir, the multi-purpose tool.
Mm-hmm. And then Gandalf does give the history like I gave. Who knows where the lost stones of Arnor and Gondor now lie, buried or drowned deep, but one at least Sauron must have obtained and mastered to his purposes. Oh, and also, Gandalf mentions how he's kind of attracted by the idea of it, and how it draws one to itself. Have I not felt it? Even now my heart desires to test my will upon it, to see if I could not wrench it from him and turn it where I would, to look across the wide seas of water and of time, to Tirion the Fair, and perceive the unimaginable hand and mind of Feanor at their work, while both the white tree and the golden were in flower.
Mm.
He wants to see his home. He wants to be able to look back.
Aww.
Because, did I tell you that the wizards only have vague memories of their time before they were wizards?
No. Why is that?
Because they need to be focused on the here and now. They need to be focused on their work.
That sounds very sad.
It is very sad. And I never really think of that until I get to like these kind of lines where it's like, they don't have memories of home right now. They're very detached.
Or like any families or loves or anything.
Yeah.
Wow. I used to think it'd be cool to be a wizard, but knowing that, that sounds sad.
And then this little interaction. If all the seven stones were laid out before me now, I should shut my eyes and put my hands in my pockets. Good, said Gandalf. That is what I hoped. But I should like to know, Pippin began. Mercy, cried Gandalf. If the giving of information is to be the cure of your inquisitiveness, I shall spend all the rest of my days in answering you. What more do you want to know? The names of all the stars and all the living things and the whole history of Middle-earth and over heaven and of the sundering seas, of course, said Pippin. What less? But I am not in a hurry tonight. At the moment, I just was wondering about the Black Shadow. I heard you shout, Messenger of Mordor. What was it? What could it do to do at Isengard? And Gandalf basically says, the scary thing is, the Nazgul is going to arrive, and Saruman is going to spill his guts, and he'll know then what happened.
Yeah, no matter what.
A messenger has been sent to find out what he is doing, and after what has happened tonight, another will come, I think, and swiftly. So Saruman will come to the last pinch of the vice that he has put his hand in. He has no captive to send, he has no stone to see with, and cannot answer the summons. Sauron will only believe that he is withholding the captive and refusing to use the stone. It will not help Saruman to tell the truth to the messenger, for Isengard may be ruined, yet he is still safe in Orthanc. So whether he will or no, he will appear a rebel. Yet he rejected us so as to avoid that very thing. What he will do in such a plight, I cannot guess. He has power still, I think, while in Orthanc, to resist the Nine Riders. He may try to do so. He may try to trap the Nazgul, or at least to slay the thing on which it now rides in the air. In that case, let Rohan look to its horses. But, Gandalf basically says, I don't know what we're going to be doing, but we have to just keep riding. And Pippin goes, are we stopping at Helm's Deep? And he goes, no, we're going to Minas Tirith before the seas of war surround it.
Why to there? Hmm? What are they looking to do there at this point?
Because Gandalf knows that as soon as Sauron realizes the ring is now out of his reach, he's going to commit to full-fledged war on Gondor. The thing stopping him from sending his armies in anyway.
So they're preparing.
So he is going to head to Minas Tirith to basically prepare the final defense along with Pippin.
Mm.
And I love this final glimpse we get of Pippin until the next book. As he fell slowly into sleep, Pippin had a strange feeling. He and Gandalf were still as stone, seated upon the statue of a running horse, while the world rolled away beneath his feet with a great noise of wind.
Whoa. Is that what it's like riding on Shadowfax?
I think so, because he is like a magic horse.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes me wonder if he just kind of speeds up the world around him. Yeah. Or, like, those effects where, like, people are going faster than the speed of light and everything's, like, rushing past them, but they're, like, stock still.
Wow, that sounds glorious. As someone who grew up riding horses, one that's not bumpy and comfortable. And
yeah, one that's not jamming itself into your crotch over and over again. And that's the end of the chapter. That's the end of book 3.
I was going to say, not just the chapter, the book. Are you finally going to know what Sam and Frodo have been up to?
Yeah, and we're not going to hear from Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli, Merry, Pippin, or Gandalf until the next book.
Oh my god.
It's all Sam, Frodo, and Gollum from here on out.
Truly, I forgot about them bitches.
And I'm rather excited for these. Because so often people think of like the big adventure type deals.
Mm-hmm.
Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli, Battle of Helm's Deep, the ruining of Isengard. And then you get to Sam and Frodo's chapters, and it's all very contained. And I just think it's very interesting to think about.
I'm excited.
I got nothing else to say, really, on this chapter.
That was pretty solid. I love the Palantir lore. That was great. I love some lore like that. I love being jump-scared by Feanor.
Mm-hmm.
And also just, like, having knowledge of a character from the film that I can apply to these books. It makes me feel educated in the lore of, oh, I know him and I hate him.
Oh, I don't like him. I don't like this gross motherfucker.
Freaking Feanor. Solid.
Well.
Roll the credits.
Special thanks to Wool for drawing our intro. Not our intro and outro.
Drawing it's our always intro.
The same. For drawing our cover art.
Put that blooper at the end.
Yeah. And special thanks to Jack Hook, who plays Lethal Company with me, and also did the intro and outro music. Special thanks also to our Patreons over on Patreon. You can find it at patreon.com/thesillymarillion. And you can find us on Twitter at sillymarillions.
Wow, look at you.
Oh my god. It took me all the way. We're basically halfway through the books. It took me halfway through the books to get the fucking. I'm going to forget them by next
week. Let's see how you do next week.
Special thanks, to all our patrons over there. Come listen to us. Give us money, please. And special thanks to people who are just listening and aren't paying money. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being a part of this community.
We wouldn't still be doing this if not for you.
I appreciate you guys. That's all I gotta say.
And with that,
da-da-da.